Laying the Foundation by Nemane of the Water. Rating, Teenen Up. Relationships, Tsungse Sanren / Lan Turen, Tsungse Sanren / Lan Turen / Wei Chengze, Baoshan Sanren / Lan Yi. Tags include Alternate Universe Canon Divergence, Pre-Canon, Where is the Line Between Flirting and Bullying? Don't ask Tsungse Sanren in any case. Arranged Marriage. Read by a group for Voice Team 2025. Featuring Nonplussed as the narrator, Daisy Divergence as Tsungse Sanren / Xiao Siyu, Jenny Sequa as Lan Tiren, Semper Fiona as Wei Chengze, Carrie Arentikai as Baoshan Sanren, Lady N as Lan Yi, Auntie Iroh as Lan Disciple No. 1, Misty and Risky, Lan Haoran, Gavi Lan as Sect Leader Lan. Summary. Lan Tiren and Tsungse Sanren are betrothed. Neither of them are particularly happy about it. Author's notes. For Theban Sacred Band. I have given Tsungse Sanren the personal name Xiao Siyu. Xiao is to match Xiao Xingchen's family name. Xiao Xingchen's personal name came from this poem by Li Shangyin, linked in the original fic page, a Tang Dynasty poet. I have therefore taken Siyu's name, meaning misty rain, from another poem by the same poet, also linked.
I agree,
Father says, and it is all that Tiren can do to keep his back straight and his hands relaxed, to keep his face still and calm as befits the Lan Er Gongzi, second son of Gu Su Lan, to stop tears welling in his eyes because no matter his training and his station, he is only 13 and this is the rest of his life which is being bartered away in front of him. It is all he can do not to jump to his feet and start shouting. Only he can't, because he has to respect the elders, and there's no one quite as old as Lan Yi on the mountain. He has to listen to his family, and his honored ancestor is the one who proposed the match, and father is the one who agreed to this betrothal. He can't argue with family, no matter that he knows that it was Xiongzhang who Lan Yi had originally thought to offer in marriage. Later, when they had exited the cave in which Lan Yi dwelt, Xiongzhang had stood in front of father and, words calm and logical, had laid out the impracticalities and disadvantages of the heir of Gu Su Lan throwing himself away on an old alliance with Baoshan Sanren's immortal mountain for the sake of nothing more than nostalgia. Father hadn't replied, had merely sent Tiren away to catch his missed lessons. But Tiren had seen the gleam of satisfaction in Xiongzhang's eyes as he had ushered Tiren out from the Han Shi before closing the door behind him. Tiren had stood for a moment in the cold, hearing the murmur of voices between his father and brother, and then he had left. Tiren isn't surprised that father had decided that his own life is less important to the sect than his brother's. Father is correct, of course. They, filial descendants that they are, can't argue against their honored ancestor's wish, no matter that Lan Yi has long since stepped down as sect leader, that she has been trapped in the cold cave since before father was alive, since before grandfather was alive. And of course, Xiongzhang can't be the one to sacrifice his future happiness. He's the sect heir, after all. By betrothing Tiren to Baoshan Sanren's disciple, they have forged a link between the mysterious mountain and Gu Su Lan. Baoshan Sanren does not meddle in the mortal world, except now she knows that Lan Yi is alive. Somehow she does. Much like Lan Yi did not care to interfere with her descendants until she received a letter from the Immortal Mountain. It is an honor, he knows. Father and Xiongzhang have acted for the good of the sect. After dinner, Tiren kneels in penance and copies out his family's rules, over and over, reminding himself that this is his duty, the way that he should repay his forebears. He only stops when his hand is cramping and the tears in his eyes make it too hard to see.
Shifu.
Siyu says suspiciously.
Do you not think I can look after myself?
She is 15. She doesn't know how long she has been 15. On Baoshan Sanren's mountain, time is complicated. It drifts around the peak like wispy clouds. It condenses and drips into swift-flowing streams. It pools in shadowed spots. On particularly sunny days, it disappears altogether. Though Xiao Xiyu has only seen the great peach tree flower 14 times, she feels as though she has spent eternity on her master's mountain. She knows if she doesn't do something, then that feeling will become reality.
Why would my mischievous disciple think that?
Shifu says, not looking up from her work.
Is it because I had to rescue her from Xiaobai only a week ago? Or perhaps because you passed out in the cloud pavilion because you were so busy looking upon the world below the mountain that you forgot to eat or sleep? Maybe it has to do with the lack of self-preservation instincts that you must have to dare steal from Chengha in the kitchens.
Shifu!
Siyu objects.
Why would anyone run from Xiaobai? She's old and crotchety, and it's not my fault that she likes to sleep in strange corners. I don't know why we even keep her. She's so old that her milk dried up years ago, and it's not like she lets us get close enough to collect her wool.
Shifu raises an amused brow, setting her brush down to stare at her disciple.
She's older than you, Yu'er.
Exactly. She should have been gone long before now. I swear to the heavens, that goat is sustained by spite alone. In fact, she probably feeds on fear. In which case, I was only doing my solemn duty by chasing her.
Xiyu laughs at the long-suffering look on Shifu's face.
And the cloud pavilion?
Shifu asks.
How is Yu'er going to convince me that she's able to travel alone if she cannot do something so fundamental as remember to eat?
Simple.
Xiyu says, tossing back her hair in a practiced move.
The only reason I spent so much time there in the first place was because I wanted to watch life in the world below the mountain. Since I'll be traveling through that world anyway, I'll be too busy seeing things for myself to forget to eat. Shifu, stop laughing at me!
Shifu does not stop laughing, but she does say,
a compelling argument my young disciple has made.
So Siyu magnanimously forgives her.
And stealing food from Chang'e?
I was helping Xishang train his reflexes.
Siyu says righteously.
It's not my fault he wasn't able to catch me before I ate all the peach dumplings.
And if I ask him for his side of the story?
Then he'll say the same.
She says. Chang'e owes her for looking after baby Xingchen, who, adorable as he is most of the time, still has an unfortunate propensity to throw up everywhere. Actually, Siyu brightens.
Shifu, I've had the best idea.
She says.
Chang'e can marry young Master Lan instead. He's much more patient than I am, and he actually likes following the rules. He'll be much happier as part of the Lan clan.
Shifu sighs.
Siyu, have you forgotten that Chang'e doesn't want to descend the mountain, unlike a certain other disciple of mine?
She stands, walking over to rest a gentle hand on Siyu's face.
I've always known that you would leave me.
She says.
But I had hoped to provide you with some modicum of protection when you did. Siyu, you don't have to marry the land boy if you don't want to, but at least meet him. You might find him stuffy at first, The lands are just like that, born old and boring. But they are also loyal, righteous, and true. The best friends that you can have.
Xiyu looks up. There is a familiar look on her shifu's face, soft and sad and staring out at something that only she can see. It's a look that's become more common since Shifu received a letter from the Lan sect on behalf of their retired sect leader. Shifu is the one who uses the mirror in the Cloud Pavilion most, after all.
Fine.
Xiyu whines, loud and bratty, drawing her Shifu's attention back to the present.
I'll meet this Long Gongzi, but I won't marry him.
That's all I ask.
Shifu says.
And I wouldn't discount him as a partner yet. Perhaps you'll be surprised.
What are you doing?
Qiren doesn't recognize the figure in front of him. Despite that, he is certain that they are intruding. That certainty is only reinforced when the figure turns and, instead of doing anything sensible like apologizing or explaining why they think themselves above the Lan sect rules, merely grins at him.
You're so cute.
The figure, the girl, says.
Look at that little scowl. Yes, just like that. Ah, Xiaoxidi, what are you doing awake? Aren't you meant to be asleep at this hour, I'm fairly certain there's something on your wall of rules about that.
Qiren bristles.
I?
He says, glaring at her with all the authority he can muster.
I'm on patrol, and I am certainly not your Xiaoxidi. I have no idea who you are, but you're certainly not a Lan sect disciple.
The intruder is wearing Lan robes, it's true, but they are a little too large on her and are embroidered with the crest of the inner clan. Qiren knows every living member of the living clan and most of the dead or ascended ones, even if he hasn't met them all in person yet. Furthermore, the ribbon that she's tied around her head is nothing more than a plain white ribbon, enough to fool someone outside the sect, but glaringly wrong to anyone in the clan. Qiren is a little annoyed that she thought that any old strip of silk would be enough to fool him, but it is, he supposes, better than her stealing a ribbon. He draws himself as straight as possible, embarrassingly aware that he has not yet hit his growth spurt, and adds,
"Furthermore, I am a senior disciple, and I have every right to be here, as I'm on patrol. Now, are you going to follow me and report to the sect leader, or am I going to have to force you?"
The intruder tilts her head in consideration.
Force me,
she says.
What?
Don't blame me, Xiaoxidi. You're the one who gave me the choice,
the intruder says. She pulls out her sword and throws it in front of her, leaping forward onto it with a qi augmented burst and speeds off into the night. Qiren wastes a moment gaping after her. What is she doing? Flight is prohibited in the residential areas of the Cloud Recesses, not just because it's disruptive and disrespectful to those living there, but also because it is extremely dangerous. The amount of control needed to maneuver one's sword through the trees and buildings is astronomical. He clenches his fist. And then he pulls out his sword to follow her. The little Lan disciple catches up with her on the edge of the back hills. Xiyu is impressed. She's the best flyer of her martial siblings, quick and sure and unafraid to take risks.
Xiaoxidi, despite your young age, you're really quite talented. We should have a spar together once my business is over. Shifu always says we should cherish the younger generation.
To Siyu's amusement, the Lan disciple's neck turns a blotchy red at her words. She wasn't aware that Lans could do that. From what she had heard from her shifu, either they were physically incapable of blushing at all, or blushed like watercolors spread on a white canvas. This land disciple looked as though someone had washed his robes with itching powder.
I am the second young master of the Lan sect.
Apparently second young master of the Lan sect, says, puffing himself up like an affronted hen.
I am neither your junior nor your Xiao Shidi, and if you don't come with me immediately, I will have to force you.
Xi Yu is tempted to coo and poke at his pudgy little cheeks. The only reason she refrains is because she does actually have somewhere to be and only so much darkness to do it in. Later, she'll have to break in again and seek out this little master.
Haven't you learned your lesson about giving me a choice?
Xi Yu asks.
I'm Sangsa Sanren, disciple of the great Baosheng Sanren. I will never choose to willingly submit.
Allegedly second young Master Lan gapes at her. Xi Yu takes the opportunity to swiftly turn on her heel and, sword in hand, dive toward the entrance of the cold cave. She takes the entrance through the cold spring. Why not, after all? She'll try anything once, thrilling in the violent shock of the glacial water as she hits the surface and then continues underneath. It's definitely the sort of thing that she's only going to do the once, though. Do the Lan sect really meditate in this water? In Xi Yu's opinion, the only way it'll help one's cultivation is through desperation to get out. And that's only if one doesn't get frostbite first.
Senior Lan,
she says, as soon as the breath in her lungs is no longer liable to send her into a coughing fit.
What made you choose the cold cave of all places for your resting place? Surely there were better, more comfortable caves to shut yourself off from the world. In this junior's opinion, Shifu would be a lot more likely to visit in person if she didn't risk her extremities falling off.
Xi Yu reaches into her Qianqun sleeve and pulls out a drying talisman, sticking it onto the front of her sodden robes. Then, after a moment of thought, she pulls out a second.
Ewer,
Lan Yi says.
I am honored to finally meet my Shijie's precious disciple. Aiyan has told me much about you.
And all of it bad, I hope.
Xi Yu replies cheerfully.
Here, I've got a letter for you and some dried peaches. Shifu said that you'd enjoy them. Shifu, if you're watching us, despite your pessimistic words, I haven't eaten any of them.
Thank you, Ewer.
Lan Yi says. She pats the seat beside her.
Here, come sit and share them with me. Such patience and self-restraint should be rewarded.
Xi Yu is not polite. She hurries over to the stone bench and places the open packet of peach slices between them before handing Lan Yi the letter directly. She does, however, wait until Lan Yi offers her a slice before starting to eat. She's not completely devoid of manners, no matter what her shixiongmen say. The peach slices have a pleasant texture to them and taste just as sweet as she remembers. Every summer, she and her martial siblings climbed the great peach tree, laughing and pelting each other with fruit whenever they thought their shifu wasn't watching. It was a mark of pride to be able to catch the fruit in one's mouth instead. Xi Yu can practically feel the phantom drip of juice running down her chin.
There was a peach tree outside my courtyard when I was growing up,
Lan Yi says.
The peaches were small and hard. My family were monks first and cultivators second. We had no knowledge of how to tend a peach tree. We ate the fruit, of course. It would have been disrespectful not to, but I never particularly enjoyed it. And then Aiyan came and would laugh at the way I would pucker my mouth when eating the peaches, would tease me for finishing them regardless. She would take them from me and cook them in honey until they were as sweet as her tongue. The peaches you've brought, they're larger and sweeter than those that grew outside my window, but they taste exactly the same.
Shifu always babies that peach tree.
Xiyu says.
She says it was a gift from a dear friend, and older than all of us besides, so we have to respect it.
Lani's eyes soften.
Haiyan would always save the peach pits.
She says.
They would be falling out of her sleeves. She collected so many. Whenever we met outside the cloud recesses, she would plant one so we would remember our travels. How foolish. I hadn't realized. When we parted ways, I hadn't realized that she'd brought one with her.
Xiyu carefully sets down the piece of dried peach in her hand and pushes the entire package to Lan Yi.
In that case, senior lunch and finish eating these.
She declares.
Don't worry about running out. Even if Shifu doesn't send more, Xiyu will fetch more peaches for senior Lan. Fresh peaches, peach tea, dried peaches, cooked peaches, peach jam. Has senior tried sweet paste made from peach kernels? My Changha Xixiang used to make it for me when I was a child. It's really good. I'll find some for you and bring it.
Xiyu truly is a filial child,
Lan Yi says.
I look forward to seeing you in the future. Still, there's no need to deprive yourself for my sake. It has been many years since I mastered Anidia, while Xiyu is a growing child.
Lan Yi looks up across the cave. A soft smile stretches across her face.
In fact,
she continues,
perhaps Xiyu can share with Chiren. I hadn't realized that the pair of you had come together.
Xiyu looks up. Glaring back at her, and unfairly dry, is probably second young Master Lan. As soon as they exit the cave, Qiren and Changsa Sanren exchange a wary glance.
A long engagement?
Qiren says.
And it's not really lying.
Changsa Sanren says.
And it's not like you want to be married to me any more than I want to be married to you. This is the best way forward for both of us. We'll have a few more meetings, and in 3 years, we'll tell Senior Lan that we're not compatible and get on with the rest of our lives.
Qiren thinks, chewing anxiously on his lip until he realizes what he's doing and stops. Do not tell lies, but this isn't a lie, really, and it's not like they aren't going to get to know each other better over the next few years. His honored ancestor also didn't look as though she wanted them to get married immediately, and as she was the one who had pushed for the marriage in the first place, surely her will should supersede those of his father and older brother?
Look,
Changsa Sanren says,
it's not that I don't like you, but I don't know you at all. I came down the mountain to explore and to figure out who I am and what I want to be. I refuse to be chained to yet another mountain just after having left the last one. And I certainly don't have time for a kid of a husband.
Qiren bristles.
Well, who says I want to marry you?
He demands.
You're rude and loud and keep breaking the rules. I don't think you even know the rules. The only reason that I'm even in this situation is because Shengjiang didn't want to marry you, and Father said that someone had to uphold our honored ancestor's promise.
Changsa Sanren narrows her eyes, her hand dropping to the sword sheath at her back. There is something electric in the air, emanating from her in soft waves. And makes the back of Qiren's neck prickle, makes something at the back of his brain scream, run away, leave before it's too late. Qiren refuses to move, glaring back. He is second young Master Lan, the youngest of the senior disciples at only 14, bound by blood and ability to stand his ground against whatever terrors stalk the lands, no matter what. No matter who. Even if they're his extremely annoying betrothed. He draws his own sword, planting his feet firmly as he prepares to defend himself against the enemy. Only to blink, bemused, as Tang Se Sanren lets go of her sword and starts laughing at him.
Your face!
She manages to get out between laughs.
You looked as though I was gonna eat you.
Siren pushes her back into the cold spring.
Little second young Master Lan!
Xi Yu calls out, waving at the white-clad figure standing at the entrance. Even if she hadn't been able to see his scowl, still so cute, he would have been easily recognizable from the way he was a good foot shorter than the rest of the disciples surrounding him. Lan Siren recognizes her. The scowl is a pretty sure indication of that. But he ignores her waves, instead talking quietly with his fellow disciples. Well, they can't have that. Xi Yu picks up the jar of wine from her table and strolls over to the gaggle of Lans.
Jiren,
she says.
What are you doing here? I thought you Lans were meant to stay on your mountain, spending your days in self-flagellation and rule recitation.
Xixiong?
One of the disciples asks.
Do you know this person?
Lan Xiren sighs.
Lan Mao, Lan Yuzi, Lan Haoran, Lan Bawen, greet Tsang Se Sanren. Tsang Se Sanren, these are my Shi Di men. They are taking part in their final night hunt before their promotion to senior disciple.
The four of them, five of them, including Lan Xiren, bow in unison. Xi Yu returns their greeting solemnly.
Tsang Se Sanren?
One of them, Lan Haoran, probably, asks.
Bao Shan Sanren's disciple?
That's me.
Xi Yu says, tossing her hair back.
I heard there was a night hunt in the area. I hadn't realized that the Lan sect would also be here.
Why wouldn't we?
Lan Xiren asks.
The Lan sect watch over this territory. It's our duty to attend to all night hunts in this area.
Oh, is that how it works?
Xi Yu asks, widening her eyes.
Forgive this sheltered disciple. I didn't know. After all, I have just spent the last 3 months in the Jin sect territory, and it doesn't look like there are any cultivators there at all. As soon as I headed to the gambling dens in Longling, though.
Gossip is forbidden.
Lan Xiren interrupts hastily, glaring at her. A couple of the other disciples are gaping. One of them looks intrigued.
Is it gossip if I'm just relaying the truth?
Xi Yu asks.
Anyway, moving past my extremely accurate representation of the Jin sect, have you got a table yet? I'm willing to share mine, and some of my particularly fine wine, in the name of solidarity between fellow cultivators.
Xixiong, can we?
Lan Xiren looks as though he's got a headache.
We have a murder to investigate,
he says.
There's no time.
But isn't this a night hunt meant to evaluate your junior's capabilities? I'm sure they'll be able to manage without you. Here, you and I can sit at my table with the wine and catch up while they go and investigate. That way, they'll know where to find you to report back, and we can catch up.
Alcohol is forbidden.
Then you can drink tea instead.
Lan Xiren sighs, but obediently follows her to the table.
Come on,
says Xi Yu.
Stop looking like an old man. What's the worst that could happen? Ren!
Comes a cry.
Is that really my little second master? What happened to him? Have you had a run-in with some demonic beast?
Qiren rolls his eyes.
It's called a growth spurt.
He replies, good manners, utterly wasted on Xiao Xiu, compelling him to stand and greet her properly. And spend one moment quietly pleased that he's now a good head and a half taller than her.
Perhaps you would have realized earlier if you ever visited.
He continues, straightening from his bow.
Visiting the cloud recesses? Boring. And I swear, your brother and father hate me. Since I've been banned from interacting with the juniors, I can't see the point in subjecting myself to those boring elders when I could be off doing something more important. If anything, you should be the one traveling out to find me more.
While you mentioned frequenting brothels, I hadn't thought it was something you did regularly.
Xiu brightens.
Qiren!
She says.
Excellent. You've got perfect timing. Have you met Madame Hong?
When would I have had the opportunity?
Well, you have now. There's some sort of resentful spirit haunting this brothel, and none of the other cultivators could be bothered to take the job. Ha! Shows what they know when Madame Hong is far more knowledgeable than the entirety of Longling Jin put together. Now, we need someone to infiltrate the musicians this evening, and though you're always telling me that my Zhao playing can wake the dead, the ghost will probably get suspicious if I'm the one pretending to be a professional musician. You'll have to shave that patch of fluff off your face, of course.
Qiren is covered in blood and staring at the sky. He is somewhat disinclined to move, considering. Beside him, Xiu chokes out a laugh.
Despite your, well, everything, it's never boring around you.
You're a menace.
Qiren says.
I regret the day I met you.
Neither of them move. Changze is not meant to be here. In a more general sense, the Lansec lectures are held once a year. Attendance is restricted to the most exceptional young cultivators, which in practice means those who have the backing of a powerful sect. Changze is not a cultivator. And no matter what Feng Ge says, he's not truly a member of the Jiang sect. He should not be in the cloud recesses, not when there are junior disciples at Lotus Pier who would happily spend a few hours playing servant if it meant access to the Lansect libraries, the opportunity to meet and study with the eminent young masters of the cultivation world, the possibility of gaining fame and renown. Changze hears the whispers that surround him, not just from the Jiang sect. He knows that his presence is a loss of face for his sect, that it looks as though the Jiang sect had so few competent disciples that they had to resort to sending a servant with no cultivation ability to pad up their numbers. Knows that the only reason that he was sent at all is that Feng Ge's parents love their son. No, Changze should not be at the Lansect lectures at all. And, setting that aside, he certainly should not be here in the middle of a night hunt with Feng Ge nowhere in sight.
There's no use. It's stuck tight.
Changze Sanren says.
Not to mention we're losing light fast. I've sent an emergency talisman, but who knows how long it's going to take him to get here. In the meantime, we should make ourselves comfortable. I don't think there's any dangerous creatures outside Gusulan, but honestly, who knows with those sanctimonious monks seeding the forest with predators as a training exercise for their juniors sounds just like something they'd do.
Changze is certain that the Lan sect wouldn't do such a thing. Surely not even the Nie sect would risk their disciples' lives, and they are known for a somewhat brusque approach to training. But he doesn't speak. Instead, he gets to his feet and starts to collect scattered branches. Luckily, the cave had been open to the elements before the explosion that caused the rockfall, and numerous pieces of wood had been blown in over the years. Though it's summer, Changze has never lived anywhere but Lotus Pier and has no golden core to shield him from the mountain's chill.
What are you doing?
Changze Sanren asks.
I'm no healer, but even I know the blood should be inside your body and not dripping around the floor. Moving around is going to make it worse.
We need a fire.
Changze says plainly, blinking through the dark spots clouding his vision.
Forgive this servant, but aside from a source of heat, it will facilitate our rescue. Even if the flames aren't visible, they will be able to follow the smell of the smoke.
Why are you being so polite?
Changze Sanren asks.
You don't need to refer to yourself as this servant. We're fellow guests of the Lan sect, aren't we? You're one of the Jiang, right? I've seen you follow Jiang Fengman around, though you never come out to play with the rest of us.
Forgive this humble one.
Changze says, bowing. This turns out to be a bad idea. A rush of dizziness engulfs him, and for a moment he wavers on the precipice of falling. And then a warm set of arms engulf him, carefully lowering him to the ground.
Changze Sanren, this... I can't...
If you're gonna say this isn't proper, then I'm just going to ignore you.
Changze Sanren says.
You were about to faint, and we've got enough problems on our hands already. We don't need a fire anyway. We can share body warmth. That way, neither of us risks falling into it. I don't know about you, Wei Gangze, but I'm exhausted. Holding back a mountain is no easy feat.
Changze makes a faint noise of protest. It seems to be the only thing that he, acutely aware of the closeness of her skin, the warmth of her body seeping through her own thin robes, can produce.
Fine, so maybe it was only a few rocks. And it was more of a deflection than a prevention, but it's still impressive. I've decided to exercise my right to do nothing more but sit here and wait to be rescued, before basking in the adoration of my fans. Have you met Lan Haoran yet? He thinks that I hung the moon and stars and is always asking about my exploits. For a sect with such fuddy-duddies for elders, the younger generation is very cute.
Lan Haoran?
Changze says. His mind supplies him with an image of a tall youth with a serious demeanor and very impressive arm muscles.
Third young master of the Lan sect? I believe he's our sword instructor.
Is he? I didn't know Chiren had another brother.
He's their cousin, I believe.
Changze says.
Their father's younger sister's child.
He tilts his head, thinking. In his mind's eye, the intricate scroll of clan connections unfurls, long hours of sitting in lessons with Funke rising to the surface.
His father married in, sect leader Ouyang's fifth brother, Ouyang Muchen. It was a love match. Though the Lan sect also received taxes for one of the Ouyang clan's more lucrative waterways as part of his dowry.
Changze trails off under Changze Sanren's incredulous stare.
How do you remember all that?
She says. Changze winces. He hadn't meant to ramble on, and he certainly hadn't meant to gossip about Third Young Master Lan. Perhaps it is for the best that he hadn't been able to start a fire.
The servant is honored to assist Fenge, that is, Young Master Jiang, with his lessons. Forgive the servant for overstepping.
I told you to stop that.
Changse Sanren says, poking his arm.
No apologies, and no more referring to yourself as a servant.
Seeing Changse's frown, she pokes him again. Though it's gentle enough, Changse can't help the twist of his lips at the touch.
I knew it.
Changse Sanren says.
You're injured. Here, let me take a look at the wound.
Changse Sanren!
Changse says, quickly batting away her hands as she tries to remove his outer robe.
There isn't an injury.
If you didn't have anything to hide, then why are you fighting me?
Changse Sanren shoots back.
And why did you flinch?
I'm ticklish.
Changse says, pulling himself further from her grasp.
Changse Sanren, there really isn't anything.
Changse is not meant to be here, in this cave, with the famed disciple of Baoshan Sanren. He feels this acutely as the fabric rips under the pressure, leaving him clad only in his inner robes and sending both him and Changse Sanren sprawling, as the rocks at the cave entrance burst outward from a burst of spiritual energy, as Second Young Master Lan, Changse Sanren's betrothed, stares at them from where he has freed them, Guqin in one hand and spent emergency talisman in the other.
What is going on here?
Siren isn't surprised by the knock at his door.
Xu Yu,
he says.
It's almost curfew.
Which means you need to let me in quickly so we don't get caught. You're right.
Says Xu Yu, darting in and closing the door firmly behind her. Siren, well used to her antics, merely sighs and pours her some tea. It's shaping up to be a long conversation, and if he doesn't have something to drink, he's likely to fall asleep in the middle of the conversation.
What couldn't wait until tomorrow?
He asks, resigned.
It's not like they're going to eject you from the cloud recesses if you wait until a more sensible hour. Quite the opposite, in fact.
Jiren, no one outside of the cloud recesses considers your hours as sensible. I'd go so far as to say that the rest of the world, cultivation or otherwise, considers it a form of torture. My Shifu is a literal immortal, and even she allows herself lions. The only explanation I have is every member of the Lan sect is either brainwashed or a masochist.
And yet, you've decided to seek me out regardless.
Xiu shrugs.
I didn't say I had a problem with masochists. On the contrary.
Xiao Ziyu!
Xiu cackles as Qiren does his best to prevent his blush from engulfing the entirety of his face.
Tell me what you want, and then get out before I report you myself.
He says.
You'd betray your own betrothed like that?
Xiu says.
How cruel Second Young Master Lan is to mistreat one who knew him when he was only as high as my shoulder.
Are you ever going to let that go?
Jiren wonders, draining his cup of tea.
No, but for your sake, I will postpone it to a later time. We have more important things to discuss.
Jiren waits. And waits.
Stop being so dramatic and get on with it. I'm meant to be leading an introductory Qin class in the morning.
Jiren.
Xiu says, back straight and eyes bright.
You and I are more than betrothed. We're friends. We've had our ups and downs over the past few years, but you trust me, and I trust you implicitly.
Get to the point!
Qiren snaps.
Are you dying, Xiyu?
Yes.
Xiyu says, and Qiren's heart stops in his chest.
I am. Wei Cheng's eyes have slain me.
What?
You must have seen him!
Xiyu cries, dodging the teacup that Qiren throws at her head.
They're so warm, and that self-satisfied glint when he's done something clever, all while bowing his head and making him think that it's your idea to begin with.
Out!
Qiren roars.
I know you feel the same.
Xiyu continues.
I saw the way you looked at him when he was insulting Jin Guangshan.
Leave!
Xiyu dives out of the window, still cackling.
I'll save you a seat beside him tomorrow.
She calls back as she sprints across the grounds. Hopefully back to her own quarters, but knowing her, more likely to Caiyi Town. Qiren is left alone in the center of his house, chest heaving and cheeks bright red. Their shade is not solely due to anger.
Ridiculous.
He breathes, and then he goes to bed. If his dreams are dominated by Wei Changze's gentle hands and clever eyes, well, he blames Xiyu.
Thank you to Nemain of the Water for having blanket permission, and thank you for listening.